So I'm very happy to be here. This is my, as Maxim said, this is my first time here, and I thank the organizers for inviting me, and looking forward to a productive discussion. So today I will talk about flavor and flavor experiments. Of course, I'm not going to be able to cover everything, and I'm very selective in the particular experiments that I'll be discussing. This works. So in the standard model, there's no theory of flavor. The different flavors are put in sort of an ad hoc way, and we look forward in the future to there being some kind of theory of flavor. But flavor aspects of experiments and what we know in particle physics cover a lot of different areas, like the one I'm illustrating here from this paper by Drews and Garbeck, deal with how sterile neutrinos and in the seesaw model. And so it covers a lot of space of dark matter, possibly leptogenesis, lepton flavor violation, neutrinoless double beta decay, lepton universality, search for dark particles. They all involve different aspects of the flavor puzzle. And probably the most interesting thing that's on the present horizon is some hints of new flavor effects in B decays. And people in previous experiments at Babar and Bell, and more recently LHCb, have looked at B decays to D star tau nu compared with B decays to D star E nu or mu nu. And they find, and this is ratio with the expectation of the standard model that's shown here for the two cases. And instead of being one, they're finding something that's sort of three standard deviations away from the expectation. And big effects, possibly 10 to 20% effect at this level might be what they're observing. Of course, only 3 sigma, so it's a far distance to be sure that there's really effects. And then they've been reporting another possible, this is tau mu or tau e universality, and another one in sort of, this is charge current reactions, neutral current reactions, B to K, mu plus B minus, compared to B to K, E plus E minus. And again, in this case, they're seeing less than expected in the standard model, but still it's sort of a 2 plus sigma effect. Just last week, the LHCb put out a paper where the taus are observed in a three-prong tau decay, which means that they can do very good reconstruction, better than in the previous work that they did. And this is their result here. And so it became less significant. This is only less than a 2 sigma effect, although all of their results from LHCb would average here a little bit more than 2 sigma. So that's not the direction that you would hope if there's really an effect going on. It became less significant. Yeah?
What's the relative size of theoretical errors here and the systematic errors?
Theoretical errors are pretty small for heavy quarks like B decays, only a few percent.
So then the systematic uncertainties of the experiment?
Roughly, systematic and statistics are about the same in the LHCb experiments. Yeah?
Sorry, I also had a question. So this new design, is it based on the same data as before?
No, it's new data.
It's new data.
New data, but with a better reconstruction of the taus. And the other ones, they look for tau to E, nu nu bar, tau decays to mu and two neutrinos, or E and two neutrinos, or tau decays to a pi and a neutrino. It's harder to reconstruct.
Right. Do you know if they plan to look at the old data with the three-prong also?
I don't think so. They're taking new data, so they'll have 10 times more data.
Interesting to see if it depends on that.
In the future. They probably have more systematic uncertainties in the other types of reconstruction than in this one.
Yeah.
So it became a little less significant, now only 2 sigma. All of LHCb, the same experiment, would give 2+ sigma. If you average, do a naive average of all the other experiments, you'll get a 3+ sigma effect. So it's not exactly, it didn't move in the direction that you would hope if it's a real effect. Now, so this is a 10 or 20% effect, and this is to be compared with other charge current reactions which have studied EMU universality, like one I'm going to talk about, the pi EMU branching ratio, and these are at the 0.1% level. So they're much higher precision, but they're involving the first and second generation only, not the third generation.
Is the misprint in the first line pi to E nu over?
Oh yeah, pi to E nu. Then there are other universality tests involving the third generation taus, particularly like the comparison of tau to E nu bar and compared with mu to E nu bar for tau mu universality, and a similar one for tau E universality. And then you can also compare tau to pi nu and pi to mu nu, and tau to pi nu and pi to E nu for tau E universality and tau mu universality. And these are at the 0.2% effect. So order of magnitude smaller.
Can I ask a technical question?
Yeah.
So the decays from taus, the tests, they all come from old Aleph or some.
No, this Babar and
this
Bell.
This is Babar, right?
Yeah, Babar and Bell have results on the tau decays. Sure. And there's going to be Bell 2 coming up. And
I thought it was somehow all dominated by all lab data and all my questions.
Well, lab data is in there, but there's also Bell and Bat. So it's sort of a conundrum that if those effects are real, that they're just showing up in the hadronic B decays. Now, since this is a workshop on radiative corrections, I wanted to make a radiative corrections alert for you radiative correction theorists. This reaction tau to pi or k neutrino is somewhat different in the radiative corrections world than the k to pi, k or pi to e or mu nu. And these radiative corrections have only been done approximately, whereas the ones for k and pi have been done to, as I'll show in a minute, have been done to extreme levels of precision. So this is an area where which could use some attention of studying tau to pi nu or tau to k nu radiative corrections. And the work that was done was all done in the 1990s. Then there are also higher energy tests of W decays, but these are also at the 0.5% level. So just to summarize this part, these B decays that they're observing are possible 10 to 20% flavor universality violation effects. It's true, they're only at 2 to 3 sigma. But they're not seen at much lower level, order of magnitude lower level, two orders of magnitude lower level, in other charge current reactions. So it's possible that all the universality violation effects are in the third generation, and it has to involve both the quarks and the lepton, possibly. So if it's only in the third generation, possibly, it could be related to the mass, like in Higgs coupling. So mass of tau squared over mass of mu squared is 280. So a 20% effect in the third generation would be a 0.07% effect in the second generation. It could be new flavor changing couplings beyond the standard model, or minimal flavor violating. New theory could be minimally flavor violating. Or there could be lepton flavor violating couplings as well. And so people have come up with various models And generally, they're in the TeV scale, but they could involve some models have been put forward of scalar leptoquarks, new Z primes, H primes, et cetera.
Z primes is an issue for this particular violation of universality because you require the charge currents. Right?
Yes.
So
that would be for the that would be for the neutral,
right?
The neutral one.
It's neutral. Right?
Yeah.
It's not obvious.
Right.
Charge heat, yes. Right.
So one of the questions that I'll be looking at is could precise measurements in the first and second generation, which are much more precise than in the third generation, be used to corroborate these models? Now, a couple of papers have appeared recently to try to connect these observations, Biggs observations in the third generation with second generations. And this one is particularly interesting because it deals with the reaction that I'm going to talk about, K to pi nu bar. And the point of this paper is that this reaction, which involves all three generations of neutrinos, E, mu, and tau, is the only one second generation reaction that involves a third generation observable, not observable, but a third generation final state particle, the tau neutrinos. So they come up with a theory that has this U2Q, of course, UQL for the first two generations, and third generations being right-handed fermions, singlets. And they say the branching ratio for k plus to pi plus nu bar could vary. There could be destructive interference at minus 30%, or the branching ratio could be twice the standard model in that theory. Then another one is a violation of looking at looks like my laser has disappeared slightly. Has lepton flavor universality violation in some effective operators, and then they use the B decays to predict possible effects in. Oh, okay, good.
Kendall has a. She was trying to. Well, this is more.
Okay. Okay. Take a big swing. So in this theory, there's a Z prime that's flavor violating. So there's a Z prime that's flavor universality violating that could explain one of the LHCb results, and it could have a 10 to 20% effect on the K plus to pi plus nu bar branching ratio compared to the standard model. This is a reaction that I'll talk about in a few minutes. And this level of precision is in principle within the reach of the NA62 experiment that I'll also mention. Okay, so here's my menu of things that I wanted to discuss. Of course, I can't go into very much detail on any of them, and it's a personal selection of flavor-related experiments. I'm not going to talk about G-2 or EDMs or double beta decay, which are also very important aspects of potential things that have to do with leptons and flavor. So the various different types of menu items, such as lepton flavor violating reactions like K to mu E, mu to E gamma, mu to 3E, mu E conversion, with in small print the current levels and in parentheses the future experiments that are planned. So these are they're allowed in the standard model because of the existence of neutrino mass, but they're so tiny that they could never, almost certainly never be observed in the standard model processes. So if you observe them, then you're observing new physics. Other non-standard model processes, exotic effects like K decays to pi axion or famelons or whatever you like, or pi or K decay to heavy neutrinos. Those are also all giving effects that could be at the level of up to 1,000 TeV in naive approaches. Then also, in the lower half are standard model processes, which can be calculated very well in the standard model. And so if you see deviations, then you can be reasonably sure that you've observed new physics. And particularly, I'll focus on the K to pi nu bar reaction, which is a 10 to the minus 10 branching ratio. And then also, I'll talk about flavor universality tests in pi, and particularly pi and K decay. And I won't talk too much about the tau decays, but similar levels of precision are available in tau decays. So these are all prime reactions to look for new physics that involve either flavor universality or flavor violation, or some processes that are not included in the standard model. So here's a little history of lepton flavor violation experiments in mu and tau decays. And they started to be done almost immediately after the muon was observed in the late 1940s. And you might be surprised to know that Prontecorvo did that first experiment on a mu to E gamma. And he did it with someone named Ted Hinks, who was a Canadian physicist working at the National Research Council. And Ted Hinks has a distinction that I think he's covered more ground in his experimental life than anybody I know, because he worked with my group at Triumph on this experiment that reached a few 10 to the minus 12 level. So he started from zero and got to 10 to the minus 12 in sensitivity. I did my PhD thesis here when it was a 10 to the minus 7, so I only covered 4 or 5 orders of magnitude in my work. I also highlighted this 1977 experiment, which was the first observation of mu to E gamma. You probably, most of you are too young to have observed it. It actually stimulated the theoretical community to declare that it was a natural thing to have lepton flavor violation. Before that, it was just merely speculation. There was no theory or anything like that. After this was initially discovered and then it disappeared, when it appeared, the reaction of Weinberg and other people was, aha, it has to happen. Because basically all theories beyond the standard model produce some type of lepton flavor violation. So these people did a great service. They damaged their reputation, but they did a great service to the community by that false observation. The current levels people are continuing along this path at PSI. There are muon experiments, which I hope I have time to mention. And in the tau world, they're about 4 or 5 orders of magnitude less sensitive, but there are good theoretical reasons to believe that you might have enhanced effects in the third generation. And these will be continued also in future experiments. And in the area of, so this is the flavor violation area. In the other areas that I'm going to talk about, like K to pi nu bar, these also have been decades-long endeavors to observe them. And they were important in the establishment of the standard model, but through the absence of neutral currents. And there are experiments going on in all of these areas to reach standard model levels of precision. This is the situation for the pion decay in lepton flavor universality. I forgot to mention that not only did Prontecorvo do the first experiment on lepton flavor violation, but he invented the concept of lepton flavor universality. Okay, so I'm going to go very quickly through three courses of your dinner, breakfast, lunch, whatever meal you like, and first talk about the pion decay tests of flavor universality. The initial calculations of the pi to e nu decay were sort of a tour de force of radiative corrections. And I wanted to emphasize that since that's the title of this workshop. And these were done by Kinoshita and Berman in the early days, and then in later times by Marciano and Serlin, and Finkmeyer and a couple of other peoples. And they reached a high level of precision in calculating the pi to e nu or pi to mu nu gamma and for real radiative processes and virtual radiative processes. And it's sort of remarkable that they were able to make an accurate calculation of this process. And because, as you know, it's generally very difficult to make any precise calculations that involve particles like pions. But when you calculate the ratio of pi to e nu and the radiative process compared to pi to mu nu and the radiative process, then you can many of the difficult strong interaction components disappear, and you can make a precise calculation. And so all these terms are present, and they were calculated by these people that I mentioned. And finally,
So you had them row there on the previous line.
Yes.
So this is done in some kind of vector dominance, or
well, I think it's the lightest hadronic mass that is appropriate to make that correction. And but this was sort of superseded by calculations by Cirigliano involving chiral perturbation theory to get the hadronic effects and the strong interaction effects.
The row allows to bypass the chiral suppression, right? So if you have pi to e nu, it's always proportional naively to the mass of e. Once you include the row,
I'm just asking whether it's kind of like, as I said, vector dominance, where you assume there's kind of row mediation or. But I was saying, okay, if it's ancient, then.
So eventually, the final calculation was done by Cirigliano involving chiral perturbation theory, and this is the theoretical value. It's incredibly precise, and I think it's the most accurately calculated process involving hadrons, weak interaction process involving observable involving hadrons. The experimental result is order of magnitude or more less precise at the moment, but there's work going on that I'll mention that is continuing this. In the kaon case, the prediction calculation is less accurate, but the branching ratio is 10 times lower, so it's also a very stringent test of flavor universality. The experimental method to measure something at this 0.01% 10 to the minus 4 precision is the method that we're using at Triumph, and also similar to one that's being used at PSI is shown here. In order to measure something at the 10 to the minus 4 level precision, you have to have a very simple experiment. Because in general, in experimental physics, it's hard even to count the number of particles that you have coming in. Like counting particles to a few percent is not a trivial process. So when you think about measuring something to the precision 10 to the minus 4, it has to be a very simple experiment that you can control all the variables. So in this case, it's pions coming into a target where they stop. Generally, the pions decay to muons, and the muons stay in the target, and then the muons decay to electrons. And that's compared with pions stopping, decaying directly to electrons. And since it's a two-body decay, the pi to e nu, it's a peak at 70 MeV. And the pi to mu to e is a spectrum. So the experiment consists basically of counting this peak and counting this spectrum and taking the ratio. And so in principle, it's a simple experiment. And by taking the ratio, a lot of experimental considerations disappear, just as they do in the theoretical case. In actual fact, so here's a picture of the experiment. It involves the world's largest and best sodium iodide crystal on a low energy beam of pions from Triumph. And in order to measure this branching ratio,
Can I ask one question, just out of curiosity?
Yeah.
What fraction of the muons stop, and how do you control that?
All of them. We make sure that the beam has a very narrow momentum bite, and that the target is thick enough to contain all of them, so none of them escape.
And then where do the electrons appear? I mean, because if you have a medium that can stop the muon relatively quickly, then
it's a centimeter thick of plastic scintillator, where the particles stop, and then the electrons can escape from that. Almost all the electrons escape from that.
But what about the energy loss of the electrons in that? So there's no energy loss there. Because I assume your whole goal is to make sure that you can measure everybody's energy really well.
That's right.
So somehow you can control how the electrons are propagating in this relatively dense medium as well.
Well, it's not a dense material. It's a very low density, density of one. Plastic scintillator.
But then how do the muons stop? That's the part that
The muons have a range in plastic scintillator of about a millimeter.
It's because the particles that come in are non-relativistic, and
right.
Stopping power is radius squared. So
in pion decay, the muon has an energy of 4 MeV.
Right.
And that has a range of 1 millimeter.
Good, thank you.
So it's in a 1 centimeter thick target and a very narrow momentum bite. So then we measure all of the virtue of the experiment is that we're measuring positrons in both cases. We're not comparing pi to E with pi to mu. We're comparing pi to E with pi to mu to E. And so the detector efficiencies and everything, electrons over a wide range of energies do similar things in energy loss and multiple scattering and things like that. So what we do is measure the number of particles here and the number of particles here, and they have different timing spectrum. This is a 26 nanosecond. This is a 2 microsecond decay. So we have two different energy regions, and we have timing spectra for the low energy region and timing spectrum for the high energy region, and then various background processes also contribute. And this is just a quick summary of the statistical precision of the current level of the experiment and where it's going. And we expect the final result to be later this year. So we're going for 0.05 to 1% precision. And that will be less than 0.1% precision on the ratio of GE to G mu, the universality test. Then there's another experiment at PSI that uses a similar technique called PEN. Now, I wanted to give a few examples of the physics beyond the standard model physics that could influence this branching ratio at a level beyond which the standard model theory level is. Since the precision of the standard model expectation is so great, even a small deviation would have virtually no wiggle room to be interpreted as anything but non-standard model processes. So one possibility is some new type of pseudoscalar interaction, which would compete with the standard model process. And in a sort of dimensional analysis that's due to Marciano, a 0.1% measurement of this branching ratio could have sensitivity to exchange of a charged Higgs-type particle up to 1,000 TeV. And this would be assuming non-standard model Higgs types couplings. There are lots of other examples, various species of supersymmetry. Leptoquarks could influence this branching ratio, excited gauge bosons, compositeness, and all sorts of other things. Scalar interactions could also affect the branching ratio. And you get a better limit than you can get from super loud beta decay from pi e nu on scalar interactions of almost every type. There are some loopholes. Also, heavy neutrinos, this is a figure from one of Andre's papers. Heavy neutrinos could appear by shifting the two-body energy of the electron in pi e nu decay. And so by looking at the spectrum of residual background, looking for peaks that are at lower energy than the main peak in a background spectrum, we search for heavy neutrinos. And this is the level of coupling is around 10 to the minus 7 to 10 to the minus 8. There's also some sensitivity at lower masses due to the branching ratio itself. And the results that are available at present are going to be improved in two areas. The one accessible to pion decay in this mass region up to the level that pion decay can reach, and then kaon decay can also reach these levels. And the Na62 experiment, which I'll mention in a minute, is about to release some new results on heavy neutrinos coupled to electrons at a higher mass level. There's also the possibility of new physics appearing in three-body decays. Old ideas known as Majorons would produce a three-body spectrum like pi e nu x that would look something like this, and depending on the mass of the x particle, some type of dark, in this case, some vector bosons coupled to neutrinos are postulated. So you can search for new physics in that way as well. This is another example of a non-unitarity neutrino mixing matrix that would affect the branching ratio for k or pi to e nu decays. And David McKean recently told me about a theoretical approach that he's working on that would also affect the branching ratio involving sterile neutrinos, fermionic dark matter, and bosonic dark matter through chain decays that look something like this. So this is only a tiny sample of the non-standard model physics that could cause the branching ratio of pi e nu to pi mu nu to appear to have non-flavor universality couplings. Okay, second course that I want you to take in has to do with kaons. And so these are K fruits and kale, K foods. And the particular kaon decay that's the most prominent is the K to pi nu bar reaction. And it's like the pi nu in the first order weak interaction. This is a second order weak interaction in the standard model. And it's one of the few cases of such reactions that can be calculated to high precision. And it's been calculated to the level of maybe 8 to 10%, and theory is improving and expect it to go down to 5 or 6%. And the issue in measuring it has to do with the fact that it's the charged reaction is a 10 to the minus 10 branching ratio, and the neutral reaction is a 10 to the minus 11 branching ratio. But it's a process that in most extensions of the standard model, it has a single effective operator. And in the standard model, it's dominated by a top quark exchange. But it remains clean in most standard model models, meaning that it can be interpreted as short distance effect in models, which is in contrast to reactions involving B decays in many cases. So it's a very clean reaction, and the question is, can it be measured? And the answer is yes. Some Brookhaven experiments that I was involved in, 7 events were observed at roughly the standard model level, actually twice the standard model level, but within consistency with the standard model. And now the next step is Na62 at CERN, which is an attempt to measure this reaction to 10% precision. And the experiment uses a completely different technique than the one used in at Brookhaven. Brookhaven used stopped kaons, like we do in TRIUMF and stopped pions. And this is a decay in flight experiment. It's one of the biggest experiments in the world. It's 250 meters long and about 5 meters in diameter and filled with high precision detector and electronics and systems. The experiment is now in process at CERN. Here's a picture of it. It has a very intense beam, gigahertz of pions, kaons, and protons coming through here with high precision tracking and hermetic detection of charged and neutral particles. And this is just a picture of the type of data that is obtained by the decay in flight experiment. Basically, measure the missing mass spectrum, which is this is what the signal looks like, in comparison with the backgrounds, which look very much like the signal, like k to pi plus pi zero looks very much like k to pi plus nu bar if you miss the photons, and that's what this peak is. And the experimental difficulty is that these backgrounds are 10 to 12 orders of magnitude higher than the signal, and they have to be suppressed to the level where you can be sure that if you measure something, that you're measuring signal and not background. And so Na62 is presently running and taking data. And the early indications are that the backgrounds can be suppressed to the level required to get a signal to background of 10. And this is a plot of the missing mass spectrum versus the momentum of the charged particles. This is the two-body reaction. This is the K mu 2 two-body reaction, where the muon is assumed to be a pion. So that's why it looks like that. And the signal region is in here and in here. Na62 will be measuring this K to pi nu bar with high precision, but also 25 or 30 other rare decay processes, lepton flavor violating decays, searches for heavy neutrinos, pi zero decays like pi zero to nothing or pi zero to gamma and nothing. And it also has a mode in which it will block off the beam and look for neutral particles that have been able to come through the beam blocker and decay in the decay region, looking for dark things that decay out of nothing in the vacuum. And this is sort of a shopping list of all the things that Na62 will do, all related to flavor processes in one way or another. And so, again, I wanted to show some samples of theoretical processes, theoretical speculations that could mean if a deviation from the standard model expectation is observed, what you can do with it. And they involve supersymmetry, extra dimension models, composite, all sorts of things. And the standard model, so this is a comparison of the neutral mode, k to pi nu bar, versus the charged mode, k to pi nu bar. And that's the standard model. And these are the space that's allowed in various theoretical models. Na62 will have this level of precision, and so could observe a deviation from the standard model. There are some more. I have more examples. This is an MSSM scan of different models done by Burris a few years ago, and again, Na62 will. This is a standard model, and with 10% precision, you would be able to observe some deviation. Other models involve flavor-changing neutral currents as portals to the dark sector with sensitivities in the neighborhood of 100 TeV. And this is sensitive to low dimension operators. Mark Wise has a relatively recent paper on vector-like fermions that could affect the Pioneer-New branching ratio. Other processes that will be observed in the same series of experiments, like K to pi plus something, axion. The axion could be invisible. And previous experiments have set limits on parameters of these spaces. These orange plots are from the K-on decay experiments. And NA62 will improve that and already has some preliminary results on in this space. There's also the possibility of zero mass axion. And one of the events in this in the 949 experiment at Brookhaven was consistent with being a K to pi familon decay. That doesn't mean it is. It's also consistent with K to pi nu bar. But NA62 will improve this sensitivity by an order of magnitude. There's also the possibility that the reaction is not as in, this, in the standard model. So the spectrum in the center of mass in the standard model looks like this. But if there's a scalar or a tensor interaction, it would have a different spectrum. That's also potentially observable. And then again, with heavy neutrinos, the experiments are sensitive to the presence of heavy neutrinos coupled to muons and electrons. And new results from NA62 will be announced next week on the electron and the muon sensitivity. I'm going to skip over this neutral current stuff. Finally, with regard to kaons, there's an experiment at JPARC called COTO, which is searching for K long to pi zero nu bar. And at the present time, the limits are a few orders of magnitude away from the standard model expectation, but this experiment is hoping to get to the level of the standard model. Okay, in the last few minutes, that's COTO. That's where they're going. Okay, last topic that I wanted to mention was the lepton flavor violation experiments. And here, as I showed, there's been activity since 1940-something, pushing down the limits on lepton flavor violation. In the current world, people were very excited in what generated excitement to produce the next generation of experiments, I think, was mainly supersymmetry. But this maybe is waning a little bit. But the situation really hasn't changed ever since the muon was discovered. People believe it's worthwhile to search for lepton flavor violation because there's no nothing preventing it, except it's not present in the standard model. In the standard model, the existence of neutrino mass would push you to some astronomically small level. But you can invent non-standard model theories that give you branching ratios for lepton flavor violation in the observable range. And the important issue is that the sensitivity to new physics goes as 1 over the mass to the fourth power. So basically, you have to increase the sensitivity of the experiment by 4 orders of magnitude to get 1 order of magnitude of mass sensitivity in for non-standard model physics. And presently, there are a number of experiments going on, two experiments at PSI, one at Fermilab, and two at JPARC on flavor violation. Mu-T gamma has been in operation for 20 years at PSI, and they're on their last stage. So they've reached the level of 5 times 10 to the minus 13, and they're aiming to get to something times 10 to the minus 14 in branching ratio. And Mu-3e experiment at PSI presently is 10 to the minus 12 level and is aiming for 10 to the minus 16. So big improvements. And Mu-E conversion, this is a muon capture on an atomic nucleus, producing an electron and the nucleus in the ground, going ground state to the ground state. I don't know. Oh, there's none in. There's no present limit in aluminum, but there are 10^-12 to 10^-13 levels in other experiments, and they're aiming to go from 10^-14 to 10^-16 in experiments. And then the
roughly why mu to 3 would be what it's here in lower numbers is because it's more like 4 pi and not half.
Well, it's a completely contained reaction. And why were they able to achieve such low levels?
Better than mu to gamma, right?
Yes, because it's hard to detect gamma rays.
Right.
And you can't, in the mu to e gamma, you have to get the angle of the electron and the gamma ray to prove it's back to back. So that's the principal reason why it's more difficult.
I mean, also one thing is that in mu to e gamma, they've sort of hit the physics background as well. So they have this accidental background, which is a big deal. But then they also have the radiative background when the two neutrinos have no energy.
Well, the advantage is that the experiment exists and they know about them better.
No, but well, it's just that once you get to that level, you can't improve beyond that. Mu to 3 electrons, you also have a physics background, but they haven't hit that yet until they get to about 10^-15 or so.
I'll show some pictures. This is another plot from one of Andre's papers, which is showing that these different processes are all sensitive to different types of physics, so it's worthwhile to measure many of them. And particularly mu e conversion is a favorite of people who look at beyond the standard model theories, because since there are quarks involved and leptons involved, there are more possibilities for new physics effects to come in, and it's extremely, extremely sensitive. The PSI experiment is called MEG. Now they said they've reached the level of 4×10^-13, and they're going to 6×10^-14. This experiment depends on the resolutions of all the different measurements that can be made, the energy measurement of the electron, the gamma ray, the angular measurements, timing measurements, because of, as it was mentioned, accidentals are very important. And so it's going to be a 25-year project to get to the around the level that was originally proposed in the 1990s. The mu to 3 experiment is a technological tour de force in its new incarnation. You're using these monolithic active pixel detectors called MAPS, extremely thin tracking pixel detectors that have relatively recently been developed. And this is what their experimental setup looks like, where they'll be measuring all three particles coming from mu to 3e. Then in the area of mu e conversion, there are two experiments at JPARC. One is called DME. And this uses a new technique where the muons are produced in a production target, but they also stop in the production target, and it becomes the source of the mu e conversion. And then the beam line is used to measure the electrons coming out from mu e conversion in a high precision spectrometer. And they're aiming for a level of 10^-14, which is about 1.5 orders of magnitude below the present level limits. And then there's COMET experiment, which has a phase one and a phase two. Phase one, they're aiming for 10^-15. And this uses a proton beam striking a target, which is surrounded by a high field solenoid detector. And this was an idea that was developed in the 1980s by a physicist named Lobachev for the Moscow Meson factory, a machine you've never heard of. It was actually built, but in the days of the Soviet Union, the people who had the right to bring power to the laboratory decided not to provide it with power. So it was never built, but the idea lived on and is being developed at both JPARC and Fermilab to collect all the pions, low-energy pions, that are produced Then they decay to muons to make an extremely intense muon beam that's several orders of magnitude greater than anything that presently exists at PSI. And then the muons are stopped and they decay in a aluminum target. And then you look for the electrons at 100 MeV over C from the mu E conversion. And in the first phase, they'll basically be testing the technique. In the second phase, if it happens, it's a more elaborate curved solenoid arrangement, which they hope to pursue down to the level of 10 to the minus 16 or below. And I'll just skip that. Then there's the mu to E experiment at Fermilab, which is basically the same technique with a different arrangement of solenoid detectors. And they, at the level of 10 to the minus 16, they expect to have a very low level of background, although in reality, it's very hard to predict backgrounds at the level of 10 to the minus 16. So everyone hopes for the best. Okay, so I'll just summarize that I've told you about some of the flavor violation and flavor universality experiments, and hope that you find that interesting, and maybe we can have more discussions about which processes are the most interesting and what beyond the standard model theories might be available to test. So thank you.
Just keep this timeline for comment. Can you comment about the timelines for these conversion experiments?
They're optimistic.
What are they now?
I think I have what they say is their timelines. Here's mu to E schedule showing starting in 21, something like that.
Where are they really? Are they on track?
I don't know. I think they are. They claim to be.
Well, this is from April last year, and things are more or less on track.
They're basically funding, driven by funding. And so if the funding keeps on coming in, they'll be able to stay on these.
But DME's already something like 2 years behind schedule compared to...
Yes, in the case of DME, they needed a new beamline. And Jay Park had promised to build the beamline, but hasn't been able to do it yet. And so they're hoping that the beamline will be built next year, and that they'll be able to take data on the same schedule as Comet. But Comet's also been delayed. So everything takes a long time. There's room for all of these experiments to make a contribution.
Sure. So when do you think the first stage of Comet will take place?
Well, again, Comet has a schedule that they claim commissioning and data 2019 to 2020. But they've been delayed as well. And everybody has funding issues and accelerator issues. But Comet is very interesting because it's basically the front end of this Lobachev IDEA experiment. And they'll be able to measure many things that will determine the success of Comet Phase 2 and the potential success of mu to E. Whether or not the background levels that they anticipate. Unfortunately, these flavor violation experiments, as you saw from the mu E gamma experiment, which has taken 25 years, it was proposed to take 5 years to reach the level of 10 to the minus 14, but it's taken 25 years aiming for 5 times 10 to the minus 14. So in the past, these experiments have often missed their marks by an order of magnitude or two orders of magnitude, but still made contributions.
So can you say more about the NA62 experiment? I mean, they are taking data. What's the timeline?
Yeah, so NA62 had its first complete data set taken in 2016. It was there only about a month of data. And this should give us sensitivity to the standard model level. It may be comparable to all of the Brookhaven experiments in
so
sensitivity.
That's a border 10 events.
A few events.
Plus.
Okay. Two events at standard model level. And now it's running. It's 2017. And we'll run again in 2018. And probably we'll run after the shutdown, long shutdown at CERN. It's turned out that running at 50% of the intended intensity is comfortable, mm-hmm. but beyond that, there are issues. The the beam, as I mentioned, is a gigahertz beam, 10 to the 9 particles per second. And in that beam, which is mostly pions and protons, there are a few kaons. And these kaons have to be tracked to measure their momentum in a pixel detector, which has to have 200 picosecond timing resolution and very high momentum resolution. So there's potential for accidental effects that could impact things. So probably for the next 2 years, the experiment's going to stay in the 50% intensity range. So that would mean that it would get to 50 to 70 events of the standard model sensitivity if the acceptance holds up.
And when do the first results come out? I mean, how's the analysis going?
Actually, the analysis is going very well. The principal things that we have to worry about is photon detection efficiency, because the decay k plus to pi plus pi zero has two photons. If you miss those photons, this looks exactly like k to pi nu bar. And so in the Brookhaven experiments, we had a photon detection efficiency for the two photons somewhat below 10 to the minus 6, which was the best efficiency that had ever been achieved. In Na62, we've determined that it's at least an order of magnitude better. And this is because Na62 is a 70 GeV beam, and the other one was stop kaons, where the photons were very low in energy. So the photon detection efficiency is shown to be adequate, and also the muon particle identification has been shown to be adequate. So the two main two-body decays, which are the main backgrounds, can be suppressed to the level that is required. Now we're working through all the other many backgrounds that could mock the signal, but basically all the detectors in the system are working to their nominal expectations.
And do you know how the COTO experiment is going?
COTO is having some problems. Here we are. So they made some initial run and basically had background from neutron interactions at the same level as the previous KEK experiment had, at the few times 10 to the minus 8 level. They believe they've identified the issues of where these neutrons were, what they were hitting, and how they were creating backgrounds. And they're making modifications to their barrel detector, the outside detector, the beam pipe, and the end readout, the cesium iodide readout. So they are hopeful that in their next running, they'll be able to show that they can get down at least to the level below the current theory would allow. The current theory limit is based on the charged mode through isospin considerations. So they're currently trying to get below that level, which would be around 10 to the minus 9, still two orders of magnitude away from the signal. They project that they can get a signal to background level of 1 at roughly the standard model level. That's what they're hoping for. But it remains to be seen whether they've handled all the background processes. It's a devilishly difficult experiment, nothing in and nothing out, basically.
All right. We exhausted all our questions. Let's thank Doug again for